What kind of a host invites you to his house for the weekend and dies on you? I don't understand why he couldn't wait until Monday to kill himself.
Bernie Lomax is rich. He's a ladies' man. He knows how to party. The only problem is, he's dead. This week, we find out if eating before swimming really leads to cramps. We explain why people who do cocaine shouldn't have mustaches. And we sing us a little bit of Billy Joel. Then we find out if Weekend at Bernie's stands the test of time.
Test of time, James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? James says Gladiator with a glutton. Alan says as a father, blah blah. It's the test of time, James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? Test of time, James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today?
Man, we got to get that band to come in and do that theme live.
I don't think it's a band.
It's just John Martinez. My name is James Brief. What's your name, man?
It's Alan Noah. You know that. We've been friends for like 20 years.
How many years have we been doing a podcast, though?
2.5. Getting close to 3.
So at what point are we going to be doing podcasts longer than we've been friends?
I think we have a way to go.
Well, we could stop being friends and then continue doing the podcast, and then eventually it'll overtake it.
That's true, but I don't want to do that.
Aw.
So I think we should talk about something that came out in the news a couple weeks back.
Is it a tweet from the president?
No, I never want to talk about that. I want to talk about this news that Jason Reitman, son of Ivan Reitman.
Who is the son of?
I don't know.
Mr. Reitman.
Boris Reitman? I don't know.
Boris. Because he goes to Ivan.
I don't know. But he is going to be making a new Ghostbusters movie set in the same universe as the original two films. Jason Reitman is a director in his own right. He has made his own movies. And apparently, he used to joke about maybe someday he would make a Ghostbusters movie, but he never wanted to. And then he had this brilliant idea, and he's going to take the franchise in a new direction. And what was your reaction when you heard this news, James?
Well, my first reaction is that I do want to tell you that you are actually not that far off. Ivan Reitman is the son of Ladislav Reitman.
That's close to Boris?
Well, it's got the word Slav in it. I mean, you guessed he was Slavic. I guess about Ghostbusters, you know, the 2016 film, which I guess is now referred to as Ghostbusters : Answer the Call.
Right.
That film, you know, I have to say, I love Kate McKinnon, Leslie Jones, Kristen Wiig, and Melissa McCarthy, and Chris Hemsworth, he's great, and also Paul Feig is great, the director. The only thing I'll say about the film is just, unfortunately, I just didn't think it was that funny. I didn't think it was that bad. I saw it on an airplane once crossing the Atlantic. It killed 2 hours. I laughed once or twice, but it was not like a great comedy. It was not like Paul Feig's Bridesmaids, which he did with Melissa McCarthy. And you know, he really knows how to direct a good comedy. Then again, I'll say what I said in episode 2 when we reviewed Ghostbusters. I think people remember Ghostbusters as funnier than it is. I think it's kind of a better film than it is a real hysterical comedy. I never really thought of Ghostbusters as that funny. I think Jason Reitman will do fine by it. What I hope for this film is I just hope it can just be like, just a movie. Just, is it funny? Then it should make money. If it's not funny, don't make money. That's just what I hope. What do you think, Al?
Well, I mean, just as purely a fan of the first two movies, I'm excited that they're going to do another one. And I think one of the things that the 2016 movie did wrong was that it was a reboot and that it didn't take place in the same universe. And I remember reading some interview where Paul Feig said that it just wasn't interesting to him to create characters that live in a world where the Proton Pack already exists. And he wanted to have these characters sort of invent all of these things. And I understand that from a writing perspective. I do. And I don't begrudge him that. But I think that decision sort of put the wrong taste in people's mouths and was sort of like, okay, we're just erasing everything that came before. And I think if they had made it as more of a sequel, it might have been better received. Maybe not. I don't know. But I think there's still a lot of fertile ground to do a movie in the universe of the original movies. Also, just, you know, in terms of the gender of the cast, nobody said that in this new movie, it's going to be all male Ghostbusters. I read one little like detail of the plot, which is that apparently it centers on a young boy and a young girl. I don't want there to just be only dude Ghostbusters. There can be a guy and a girl and someone who's non-binary. And I don't care about the gender and ethnic makeup of the Ghostbusters team. I just want people who are funny and I want this story to be interesting. That's all that matters to me. You know, it's a bummer that the four actresses from the 2016 movie can't be in it because of the way that the universes are made. Yeah, that kind of stinks. But the question then becomes, will the original cast from Ghostbusters 1 and 2 come back? Dan Aykroyd? Yeah, sure. Why wouldn't he come back?
What's he saying no to? You know, I mean, and not a slight to him. I mean, hasn't he been wanting to do Ghostbusters 3 for 20 years?
Yes. He'll definitely be back. Ernie Hudson, probably. Sigourney Weaver, probably. Bill Murray, you can't predict what that guy will say yes to. He did show up for the 2016 movie. Maybe they can lure him back. Maybe he'll say that he's done. Who knows? To me, I think the biggest question of all is, can they get Moranis? If they get Rick Moranis back, oh man, I'm there opening night.
Just be a movie. Don't make this the political event. If you're a Trump person, you don't want to see it. But oh God, just make it a movie. Come on. That's all I want.
Right. But with Rick Moranis, please.
Yeah. What are you going to not want Rick Moranis?
I mean, really. You know, ghosts are dead people.
That's true. I'm with you. Where are you going with this?
Weekend at Bernie's.
Right.
Is about a guy.
Right.
Who's dead.
I see the transition.
That was a pretty mediocre at best transition, but whatever. We're going with it. So Weekend at Bernie's, I don't know. Would you call that an 80s classic? I don't know.
I mean, I'll say it's so 80s, and this is the only decade that a major studio would make a film like this. It wouldn't be done in the 70s. It wouldn't be done in the aughts. You know, maybe you would have gotten away with this in 1992 or something, but like,
I don't know. The 1940s, I could see this. I could definitely see. Or like the 1870s, that was a weird time for movies.
Yeah. Fatty Arbuckle maybe would have done something like this. But had you ever seen this film?
Yes. I had seen this movie before, but I will confess, I really remembered very, very little of it.
I'd never seen this film before until,
really?
Until this week.
Wow.
You know, there's a lot of films, especially about the 80s and 90s films that we review. A lot of them, I watch the movies and I can remember that was in the trailer. And I remember watching this preview of this movie and thinking, even as like a 6 year old going, oh my God, that looks like the stupidest thing I've ever seen. I have no interest in seeing that. It was very young for me to say this looks horrible.
So even as a young kid, you were like grooming yourself to be like a critical podcaster?
I guess so.
Oh man, I want to have like a little picture of you like as a little kid, like with your arms crossed and looking down being like, I do not approve of this movie.
I do not.
But let's give you a little reminder of the plot of Weekend at Bernie's. So basically, this movie stars Andrew McCarthy and Jonathan Silverman as Larry and Richard, who are two young employees at an insurance company who discover that someone inside the company is committing fraud. They tell their boss, Bernie, not knowing that he's the one who's ripping off the company. Bernie invites the two young men to his Hamptons getaway, where he sends a hitman to kill them because they found out his secret. but Bernie is murdered instead. When Larry and Richard discover Bernie's body, they attempt to convince people that Bernie is still alive so that they can use his house to party down. Wacky antics ensue, Richard finds love, and Bernie stays dead. So I have no idea if this movie was a hit or a flop at the box office. I know that they made a sequel, so I'm guessing it must have done moderately okay at least.
All right, it was a $15 million budget, which I was actually thinking about it. There's actually some nice locations that they film on, and there's like big parties. I think that's where a lot of the budget came from, but I kept thinking they just filmed it at some producer's Malibu house or something.
Right.
But this movie opened at number 8.
Whoa.
With $4.5 million. But it somehow limped its way to $30 million, 6.5 times its opening weekend.
Huh.
I know, it's crazy. Number 1 when it opened at number 8, it's where the bad guy at one point says, "Diplomatic immunity." Right before the good guy shoots him right between the eyes and goes, "It's just been revoked." It's a great line.
I don't know.
Lethal Weapon 2.
Oh, yes, yes.
The South Africans are the bad guys.
Right, 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 right. Yeah. I do vaguely remember that.
Yeah. But Weekend at Bernie's, we meet the boys, Andrew McCarthy, who I like to call Budget Michael J. Fox.
Whoa.
And Jonathan Silverman, who's kind of like, at least in 1987 terms, he's like a budget Ralph Macchio.
Wow. You just threw a lot of shade there, James.
It's just that Andrew McCarthy, he has a very like cute boy look, you know?
He is boyish.
Right. He kind of is Michael J. Fox boyish looking. He just never got any great scripts. And Jonathan Silverman, he's a handsome young man.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ralph Macchio. I mean, like he's not hot and he's not ugly. He's just kind of like, he's the straight man. He's kind of like Luke Wilson of the 80s.
I think that is fair. That is a very apt comparison.
And I read that actually this was considered as a possible film for the Coreys, Corey Aim and Corey Feldman.
Really?
Yeah, and then they changed it and decided to make them a little older. But I could totally see this being more of a teenage film. They decide, like, we got to have the party of our lives.
I could almost see it as making a little bit more sense.
Right.
Just because you could sort of say that they're teenagers and they didn't know any better, a la Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, when they sort of, you know, manhandle the corpse and it's like kind of just wacky kid antics.
Right. As opposed to these like 27-year-old, they totally should know when there's a dead body, you call the police.
Right. Yeah. Right. They definitely know better. You're for right. Sure.
So, I mean, we meet these guys and it's immediately clear they're the odd couple. There's the tightly wound Richard and the easygoing Larry. By the way, did you notice on Richard's full name?
No, I did not.
It's Richard Parker. Does that mean anything to you?
No.
Okay. You ever saw or read Life of Pi?
No.
Oh, okay. Because Richard Parker is the name of the tiger that's in the boat with him. And his name is Richard Parker. I just thought that was funny.
Oh, totally lost on me.
Right. But I mean, you know, you have Richard who wears a shirt and tie, and Larry, he's got the open button shirt with like the t-shirt and basically like an 80s version of the grunge outfit. But these guys work in the exact same office, in the same cubicle. So one is just the straight edge guy and one is the easy going dude.
Also, they're going to work like on a weekend, you know, and no one's in the office. So even if you are uptight, you could get away without getting super dressed up, right?
Right. And there's some like hijinks in the beginning, like some muggers try to mug them and they're like, give me your wallet. And they're like, man, it's too hot for that today. And they just walk away. And the mugger's like, what?
Yeah, he sure told me. I was like, that's a joke? Okay.
Right. So they get to the cubicle and Larry is able to tell Richard to take an impromptu hooky.
He's like, I'm ditching. We're going outside. And then you cut to them working, but they're clearly outdoors. And one of them's like, I want to jump in the water. And the other one's like, oh, no, don't. You just ate. You'll get a cramp. And then you see that they're not at the beach. It's not talking about going into the ocean. It's really just about going into a kiddie pool. I thought that was like mildly amusing. Like, you're not going to get a cramp of just flopping into a kiddie pool. James, sidebar, as a doctor, is that real or is that just an old wives' tale that if you go swimming after you eat, you'll get a cramp?
It's not something you learn in medical school.
I thought that was like day one of med school.
Well, you know the first thing they teach you in medical school is the first fact. You already know what that
is. Yeah, that the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell.
Correct.
But the second thing would be they would tell you the truth about the whole cramp 30 minutes swimming thing. No, that's not the case?
All right, it is the truth. But we're not supposed to tell you. The confections industry, they pay us under the table to keep people eating and not swimming. It's a whole racket.
Whoa. We've just uncovered a major conspiracy.
Oh, yeah.
They make some jokes about they can't go to the beach because they wouldn't want to go to New Jersey or something. And then if they went to Jones Beach, they get eaten alive by the hospital waste in the water, which I did find kind of offensive as a kid who grew up on Long Island and went to Jones Beach.
Yeah, but that was a thing in like the 90s. Remember, like the 80s, 90s, they'd be like, there's hypodermic needles. Hypodermics on the shore.
China's under martial law. Rock and roll and cola walls. I can't take it anymore. Yep. But for the plot perspective, sorry, Billy Joel, we're going to get back to the movie. They discover that there is like these errors in the books and the accounting, and that there have been these multiple insurance payouts. And this is a problem, obviously, for the insurance company. They're paying out too much money, and they figure they're going to be heroes with the boss, a fella named Bernie.
Right. So they decide to go to the boss. But on the way to the boss, we find out that Richard has a little crush on one of the pretty women that work in the same company.
An intern, actually.
Right. And do you recognize this actress, the actress that plays Gwen in this film?
I most certainly did not.
She was from a film that we saw, that we covered. And I'll give you a hint. One of the guys, when he does something, he's really excited about something, he goes like this. Interstellar.
Oh, The Last Starfighter.
Right. Yeah, this is Mags. Maggie.
Oh, the human girlfriend?
Right. Like, I was looking her up and she was in like three headlining films as the love interest, but they were all kind of flops. Like, I always thought she was very pretty. She's very charming, very like all-American girl next door looks.
And Richard is, you know, Mr. Nervous, doesn't know how to talk to girls. And Larry is trying to like shove him over and like talk to her. And he just kind of blurts out, my aunt is very sick. And she's like, what? And then he just kind of runs away. He's like, I don't know why I said that. I don't even have an aunt. I mean, I guess it shows that he's bad at talking to girls, but I don't know. I mean, there was a time in my life when I was bad at talking to girls. I would never think to say my aunt is very sick. Like, I just don't, yeah. I don't get where that comes from.
Right. But they go to meet their boss, Mr. Lomax. They decide to dress up to meet him. And they're wearing like ridiculous plaid jackets and stuff.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, the outfits that they are wearing like in the office, Larry is wearing this like plaid on plaid, like a plaid shirt with a plaid jacket. Richard is wearing these pants that are like eight sizes too big. I don't remember that as being a style in 89, although I guess I was only 10 years old. So what do I know? But they go and they're talking to Bernie.
They're talking to Mr. Lomax.
Okay. Well, but then he says, call me Bernie.
Right.
And then they start calling him Bern and he's like, Bernie. Like, yeah. Don't go one step too far. I mean, there are some interactions in there that are kind of funny. Like, Bernie is smoking a cigarette, and then I think Larry starts to light a cigarette, and Bernie's like, hey, no smoking in the office, like, while he's smoking. I also thought it was weird where they're showing him the discrepancy in the paper that they found, and it still has like the tar on it because they were up on the roof and they like got stuck in the hot tar. Like, if you're going to show it to like the boss, print it again.
Right.
I mean, just reprint that page. That should be a no-brainer. But Bernie says, oh, you know what? We need to talk about this more. Why don't you come to my house on Hampton Island?
Right. And so for those of you who are not from the New York area, the Hamptons are located on Long Island, which it's basically like a 2-2.5 hour drive due east of New York City. And it's where the, well, basically a lot of wealthy people have summer houses. And so basically someone saying, come out to the weekend in the Hamptons, especially, I think this is Labor Day weekend.
Yes.
It's a big deal.
Right. But the Hamptons, plural, includes like East Hampton and Southampton and Bridgehampton.
Which are basically just part of Long Island.
Right. There is no Hampton Island.
Right.
Actually, that's not true. I looked it up. There is a Hampton Island like off the coast of Australia.
Well, that's maybe what he meant.
No, they're clearly outside of New York City. I just didn't understand like why they changed it to Hampton Island. They could have said Fire Island or Shelter Island. I mean, there are other islands off of New York.
Yeah, but nobody knows Fire Island unless you're from New York.
Right, and everyone's heard of the Hamptons.
Everyone's heard of the Hamptons. I agree, and I think it was just because I think it's probably one of those things that they found that they were filming on an island. They wanted to get some kind of gag there. It's just weird if you're from New York and you're like, that's like an unforced error. But we go down to a scene. It's basically a great 1980s mafia dinner.
I mean, it's so funny because it's not like a restaurant you would see like in The Godfather where it's like only the mafia people go and, you know, it's just like a very small little table in like a tiny little restaurant. This is like a big restaurant where a lot of people are having dinner. It's very like bright and tacky and like the chairs have like this like weird print on them and the tables have fake flowers on them. The music that's playing is super cheesy. And apparently the mafia has gone legit because Bernie's like, oh, you need to kill these guys. They're on to me. They're on to us. And they're like, oh, we don't do killings anymore. We're a business now, which I don't know if that was supposed to be like a funny thing or if the mafia went legit in 89 or what the deal was with that.
I think it was a timely joke. It was just supposed to be funny. Meanwhile, at this dinner table, Bernie's basically convincing him, you guys got to kill these two kids. I'm luring them out to Hamptons. And they're like, yeah, okay, okay. But at the same time, under the table, the mob boss's girlfriend is playing footsie with Bernie, and it's very obvious, and it's apparently that everyone at the table knows that Bernie and this woman are having an affair. So when Bernie leaves, the mob boss is like, you know what, instead of killing these two Schwandricks, let's just kill Bernie instead. That guy's annoying, and he's sleeping with my girl.
You know, meanwhile, Richard is able to somehow recover from the my aunt is sick thing, and he goes on a date with Gwen. He takes her to a place called Hyman's Hoonin.
Right. It's the place where he said you can find the only sweet and sour matzo ball in the city. It's weird. And then Richard does one of these unforced errors. She's like, at least I don't live at home. Like, that would be so pathetic. And Richard's very embarrassed that he lives at home. But why does he bring her home to his parents' home and try to, like, sneak her in? It was such a bad move. I do like when he brings her to his house. Remember, this is 1987. She goes in and she says, I like how you decorate the place. It's got such a 60s kind of vibe. And he's like, oh, yeah, I know. I've been trying to change that. But today, if you brought someone home, they're like, wow, what a 60s thing. You'd be like, it's really expensive to get that look, you know?
Right. He's trying to pretend that it's his place. You know, it's not that his parents live there. He says that his parents died, that they died in a train crash and a plane crashed into their train. They were trying too hard to make a joke that I did not think worked. He could have gotten away with it if his parents had just stayed in their room, but the dad goes into the kitchen to get himself a glass of water, and he's like, oh, that's my butler, and she realizes that he's full of shit, and she storms out with good cause. They go to the boat to get to Hampton Island, and they think that the boat is leaving. Oh, so they like run and dive onto the boat. Oops, they didn't realize that the boat was docking like into the dock, not pulling away. Like, how the hell did they not notice which direction the boat was going? Right? Like, you could see if it's going towards the open water or towards the dock.
It was so stupid.
So Bernie's at Hampton Island and he's like, just, you know, Mr. Personality and everyone knows him. He's like, hi, Bernie. Hey, Bernie. And this one random dude says, booze and women, that's my lifestyle and I love it. And I was just like, why would some random person say that to Bernie, like as he's walking off the boat? And it looked like Bernie was like snorting cocaine, like as he was going.
100%. There's a point in the meeting in his office where he just walks to the bathroom for no reason and comes out. Oh, he's definitely doing cocaine.
Right. Oh, yeah. And it's like in his mustache.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're doing that much cocaine, maybe don't have a mustache. I mean, right? I don't want to tell you how to live your life.
Well, actually, a better health tip would be don't sleep with a mafia boss's girlfriend, because it turns out the cocaine is not what ultimately does Bernie in the end. The mob hitman comes and kills Bernie, basically injecting him with, it looks like, a bunch of drugs. That's probably what would give him a huge, massive overdose.
It is the drugs that kill him.
Yeah, I guess it is.
But I mean, you know, that and the sleeping with the mafia boss's girl. So Bernie is now dead. I don't know, maybe 20 some odd, 30 minutes into the movie.
Richard and Larry show up. They walk into a house. These two young, innocent young men have done absolutely nothing wrong. They walk in. They see Bernie. They go, Bernie, hello. Quickly, they find out Bernie is dead. And like any responsible person, they go, I had nothing to do with this. This guy has been dead for an hour or whatever it's been, and we are going to call the police.
So they do start to dial the police, and then they like think better of it, I guess.
Right. There is absolutely nothing that should implicate these two young men. It's insultingly dumb how they come up with the premise of just knock on the police and reanimating a dead guy. Like, it's so dumb. He actually says, if we call the police, we're going to be at the police station filling out paperwork for the next 10 hours. Like, you came in, you found them dead. Okay. Now, how dead was he? Okay. 10 hours later. So you're sure he was dead? Like, it was so dumb.
Yeah. I mean, it really doesn't make any sense at all. They clearly should have, you know, called it in, but then you wouldn't really have much of a movie.
Yeah. But they're even like, it's like they tried to make an excuse because they're like, everyone knows we're coming to his house. What are we going to tell them? Crazy story, guys. Totally crazy story. Showed up and the boss was dead. Oh, you mean our cokehead boss? Yeah, I guess that was going to happen eventually.
Right. Like, so very, very stupid.
And then they try to tell some of the neighbors that come over, but that doesn't work either, does it, Al?
No, because all of these guys are just there for a party and they, I guess, assume that Bernie is just being like quiet. Maybe he's stoned. Maybe he's out of it in some way. A lot of the things are like he'll be on the couch and not moving, and then someone else will sit on the couch and that will kind of shift him slightly. And then, you know, that makes the guy think that he's saying no, he doesn't want to sell him the car that he wants to buy or something like that. I think at one point, Richard or Larry, I don't remember which, is like, it's crazy that no one notices that he's dead. But it is also like kind of ridiculous that really nobody notices. I could believe that maybe a couple people are like really drunk and out of it and they don't notice, but you would think somebody does. But everyone at this party is just like a cliche caricature. There are these guys who basically reminded me of Hans and Franz from Saturday Night Live.
Right, which is supposed to be basically like old school Arnold Schwarzenegger types.
Yeah, they're like, we're bodybuilders. We pump you up. And one of them says to Richard, like, hey, dude, you need a pump. We're Iron Man. It's just like so forced.
But the one thing I will say of this crowd is they look like freeloading assholes. Every single person at this party is either drunk off their ass or high on a lot of drugs. Like, that's the one thing. I just thought this crowd was a whole bunch of, like, rich assholes. They really might not have noticed.
Fair enough. But they're not all assholes, because also at this party is Gwen, the love interest.
Right.
What's she doing here? Turns out, you know, Bernie invited her to this weekend away as well. And her family knows Bernie. That's how she got the internship. And she is talking with one of her father's old friends from college. And her father's friend says to her, "Those clothes look great on you, Gwen, but they'd look even better on my floor crumpled up in a ball." And then one of the other guys who overhears this is like, "Ha, that's funny, because polyester don't crumple." So obviously that's a joke, because, you know, polyester, who wears polyester anymore? That's an 80s thing. But like, that is just like wildly inappropriate for like this family friend. You know her father, and you're like making a joke like that. I mean, just really, really creepy stuff. You got to give Gwen credit, because she just, you know, knows these guys are creeps and walks away. But then she starts talking to Richard, and she pretty much just like seems to forgive Richard instantly, when during their last interaction, he did nothing but lie to her to get into her pants. I mean, like, he was a creep and a sleazeball to her, and he's just kind of like, "Yeah, sorry about that weird date. Anyway, you want to go for a walk on the beach?" And she's like, "Yeah, sure." I just, like, I didn't feel like she had any reason to think that he was worthy of a second chance.
So, yeah, he was a total asshole to her. But, you know, she goes back to him.
They go on this walk on the beach. They go up to a lighthouse. And then Richard, like, falls down the steps of the lighthouse, which is, I assume, supposed to be funny. It's just not at all. Like, I can even say sometimes a pratfall can be funny, but this is just like a guy falling downstairs repeatedly. It's not funny. They start making out on the beach, and then Bernie's corpse just kind of like comes in with the tide, because to get rid of him at the party, they threw him off of the balcony of the house, and the tide came in. And so then Richard has to basically just get rid of the girl and run back to the house to get Larry to help him, which I also didn't understand. Like, it's one dead guy. I mean, I would think instead of trying to get him to help you, just drag him out of the water yourself, right?
Right. And it looks like he interrupted Larry, who was in the middle of like an orgy or something.
Yeah, that was what was implied. You don't really know exactly what was going on behind that door, but they get Bernie back into the house. They put him in the bed. And then the mafia guy's girlfriend shows up, and she is furious. She's like, "If he's up there with another woman, I'm going to kill him. He better not be two-timing me." Meanwhile, we know that she's two-timing her boyfriend with Bernie. Right. So, like, a little hypocritical there, lady.
Do you remember what she calls him?
No, I don't.
She's like, "Boiny." Boiny. Oh, it's so annoying. And then from the movie Clerks, there's a very similar quote-unquote gag.
Right, where this girlfriend goes up into the bedroom and has sex with Bernie, not realizing that he's dead. Larry has a line where he's like, "Man, I always get yelled at when I just lay there." So, haha, I guess. But like, comparing it to Clerks, in Clerks, she has sex with a dead guy, but like, it's totally dark and she can't see what's going on. And they're like in like a cramped like bathroom, right?
Right. And they totally set up the premise that he had just died with a pornography magazine in his hand. So there's a reason why theoretically he might be ready for sex, even though he's dead. This is a guy who is probably incredibly damp because he's been soaking in the salt water and smells.
Right.
And also he's dead.
Right. He's been dead for several hours at this point.
Right. In the warm Hampton sun.
The lights are on in the room because then like right. The other mafia guy sees them. So yeah, there's really no way that she should not be able to know that she's
whatever
fucking a corpse.
She thinks Bernie's alive. The mafia guys think he's alive because they're like, "Hey, boss, you're not going to get what I just saw your girlfriend do. She just plowed Boiny. Like, I'm telling you, boss, the other hitman didn't do it." Like, it was, Oh, it's horrible. But right. Basically the next morning, there's a little gag where Larry is sitting at the beach with Bernie next to him. People are like, hey, Bernie. And then Bernie turns and he waves hi to them. What's going on here?
So what Larry is doing is he's set up a little string so he can sort of move Bernie's hand for him, kind of like a marionette. This is pretty terrible. Richard wakes up and he's like, we have to call the police again. He's saying it. I think they call the police again and then hang up. And all I kept thinking was, even in the 80s, I'm pretty sure if you call the police and hang up, they would still come to your house. Like, they had caller ID. You would have a cop show up eventually just to check in and see what the hell is going on.
Nah, I don't think so.
I think they would have done that, but whatever. But so then Gwen comes over and Richard tells her that he's dead, but she doesn't believe him that Bernie's dead because Larry's still like, oh yeah, he just went over there. And they find out that Bernie was planning to have Richard and Larry killed. They hear it on his answering machine because when the mafia guy called him, the machine picked it up and then he talked, which that's totally a test of time thing that happened with answering machines way back when.
Right. But everyone back then understood what happened there, which is when you were a little bit too late to answer the phone and the machine picked up, which meant it recorded the conversation that you were speaking. So they got to hear the answering machine where Bernie conveniently says, those two boys are on the island. Now murder them. So right. They're like, wait a second. We're two schmucks that are on the island. Yeah, they realize it's them. But then they find a briefcase, and what do they find inside? $100,000.
Wait, the candy bar?
No, the money bar.
You mean the stacks of money?
Yeah.
Oh. And there's also a quote-unquote suicide note for Richard and Larry that Bernie wrote on his typewriter, by the way. He was going to make it like a murder-suicide and that Larry was going to use the money for a sex change operation. And then Larry gets very upset by that. He's like, he was going to make me a drag queen. Obviously, that is very transphobic and politically incorrect. But they are, I suppose, right to be mad that, you know, this guy was planning to kill them. Then they decide that the only way they can continue to stay alive is to stay close to Bernie, because if the mafia guys think that Bernie's still alive and they're with Bernie, that they won't kill them. I don't fully get this logic.
It makes absolutely no sense. If anything, you want to be as far away from Bernie, because it doesn't make sense why staying near Bernie, once they know Bernie is not their friend. It's incredibly stupid.
Right. At that point, they should just leave. Get as far away from Bernie and the island and everything else if they're scared for their lives. But that's not what they do. They are just kind of like running around the island with Bernie and like continuing the charade of pretending he's alive.
Right. And one of the other mafia hitmen finds Bernie there, and then he basically strangles the already dead Bernie. So now Bernie is definitely dead. Definitely dead. But wait, Bernie winds up, quote unquote, walking around the dock because Larry and Richard each tie one of Bernie's ankles to their ankle. So by putting their arms around him, they're walking around, and the mob guy is like, he's rubbing his eyes and going, Hachi Machi, what's going on here? And it's incredibly, what's the opposite of a brilliant comedy?
Stupid?
Yeah, it's incredibly that.
Right. And then they end up on a boat and they're like doing this dramatic getaway in the boat, and Bernie is in the back of the boat and he falls off and he's kind of like water skiing eventually, but without skis, and he's like hitting all of these buoys, clang. What was that? Clang. There's that noise again. Clang, as his body is like slamming into the buoys behind them.
I was not going to be impressed by this scene, But I was incredibly underwhelmed by it. It's actually what you'd expect if a corpse was being dragged behind a motorboat. I thought they were actually going to do the unrealistic thing where they're going to ski past an actual ski jump competition and they're going to give Bernie tens. Like, I thought they were going to do something. He just kind of like flops around in the back. It's really underwhelming.
Right, which I guess is realistic and maybe disappointing because you want to see him do something goofier.
This was the one part I thought they were going to do it goofy. Like, he was going to do something and he was going to fly through, like, the Finnish banner or something was going to happen. No, he just kind of gets, like, you know, dragged behind like a fish that you're dragging behind in the boat or something. But it turns out that Larry doesn't even know how to drive a boat. So he's like crashing into everyone else's boats.
Yeah, he knocks over a couple of fishermen. And yeah, I guess that's also supposed to be funny because fishermen, then they're wet. So that's what makes it funny.
Then eventually Gwen comes back in again and she figures out what's going on. But at the same time, the mob goon comes back, and this time he shoots Bernie a couple times. And then they're thinking of killing Larry and Gwen and Richard, and it's like one of these gun chases. Like, they're just chasing them down and shooting, bang, 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 and just for no reason, the other guys are just not getting killed.
Well, it's because, remember they said that the mafia doesn't really kill people anymore?
Oh,
so he's like rusty, right. Maybe. I don't know.
That explains it perfectly.
It's really stupid. I mean, and then this insurance salesman basically bests this mafia hitman by tying him up with a phone cord. Like, really? This mafia hitman is, I hope, not a well-paid hitman because he clearly sucks at his job. While Richard and Gwen are upstairs hiding, Larry, like, you know, steps up and saves the day. Good for you, Larry.
He sure does.
But yeah, so now everyone knows that Bernie is dead. The cops come. The truth is out. But then while Larry and Richard and Gwen are just kind of sitting on the beach and talking about what they're going to do next, the gurney that Bernie is on, it kind of just rolls down the dock, and Bernie goes flying and lands on the beach next to them, and they kind of don't notice right away, and then someone walks behind and is like, "Hi, Bernie," and they look behind them, and there he is.
Ay, 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 not again, and then it fades to black.
Yep.
And people were like, "We gotta tell our friends to see this film," and 6.5 times as many people saw it opening weekend wound up seeing it in the subsequent weekends.
Right. And then they did go ahead and make a sequel, which I definitely have seen. The only thing I remember about it is that there's some like voodoo curse that makes Bernie like able to walk. He doesn't have to be like just propped up by the guys. He can animate because of this voodoo curse. But let's not worry about Weekend at Bernie's 2. James, with the original, the classic Weekend at Bernie's, what do you think about the movie does and does not stand the test of time?
What does stand the test of time? Very, very little. I'm trying to say something. Jonathan Silverman and Andrew McCarthy, they had a little more chemistry with each other than I thought they would. I'd never seen this film. I knew what it was about, the movie about a dead guy. Like I said already about the preview, I knew as a six-year-old that this was a stupid film. And I was kind of curious, like, really, what the hell is this film? And just what stupid excuse are they going to have? Like, I thought it was going to be something actually just very, you know, kind of simple. Like, they're going to think we did it. But it was almost that. But then it was basically like, we're not going to be able to party at his house if we turn him to the police. Like, it was just one bad gag after another. I can't think of much that's good in this film. Oh, I will say Mags. I think she's incredibly charming. I think she's very sweet.
Gwen.
Mags. Yeah, she was Mags in The Last Starfighter. But other than that, I can't really say anything good about this film. So I'm going to say Weekend at Bernie's easily does not stand the test of time. Well, what do you think, Al?
I mean, no. I'll just come right out and say no, this movie does not stand the test of time. You know, this movie is atrociously bad. And even comparing it to another Andrew McCarthy bad movie that we reviewed, Mannequin. Mannequin is really bad, but it's also like campy and like it's kind of funny in how bad it is. Even though I didn't think that was a good movie, it was more enjoyable to watch because it's like so bad. This movie, Weekend at Bernie's, really has nothing going for it. I mean, the plot is stupid. The gags are not funny. The one-liners aren't funny. The situations aren't funny. The acting's bad. The writing's bad. Everything about it is just bad. And it doesn't get to the place where it's so bad, it's kind of good. Everything falls flat. Like, nothing works. Nothing lands. I was really bored. And like, I shouldn't have been bored by this movie. I should have been at least entertained by how stupid it was and how bad it was. And been like, this is crazy. They made a movie about a dead guy. And it's so bad that I'm kind of still smiling a little bit. Like, I wasn't. I was just like, I can't believe how just god awful this movie is.
I was feeling bad for a theater in 1987 that was laughing throughout this film. Like, I felt bad for, like, that theater that just kind of caught a contagious laughter from other people and just all were laughing. Like, that's a sad, sad state.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a definite, definite no. I can't recommend this movie in any way, shape, or form for any reason, for camp value, for just to see it value, like, nothing. Don't watch it. Honestly, 135 episodes into this podcast, this may be one of, if not the worst movie we have watched.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Superman 4, you got Christopher Reeve. You've got several, like, oh, here's a minute that was good. Batman and Robin. You do have a little bit of so bad it's good Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, but like,
yeah,
you have Arnold Schwarzenegger at least.
I feel like this movie, Cube and The Last Starfighter, are maybe like the top three worst. But
oh, really? Not The Rock and Galaxy Quest out and Spider-Man? Don't you hate those three films too?
Yeah, those are also pretty bad. But I feel like they're like, it's a slightly different level. I will say one thing nice about this movie. I can think of one thing, which is that it doesn't happen very often. But maybe in certain very rare cases, if like someone is like passed out and someone like carries him somewhere, or like on the news, maybe there's some politician or something who looks kind of like they're half dead at some meeting or something. Maybe someone might say, oh, it's like a Weekend at Bernie's kind of a deal. It has kind of entered like the cultural lexicon of like a dead man walking, but that's really it. And this movie very, very much so does not stand the test of time. So we are in agreement about this one. I am not at all surprised that that is our final result. Come back next week when we are going to be talking about the cult classic The Warriors, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary. It came out in 1979. Don't forget, you know, you got to subscribe on iTunes, on Spotify, wherever you're listening to us, subscribe. When you're on iTunes, take the minute to write us a review. It doesn't take that long. I promise. A minute, 2 minutes tops. It'll help us out. It'll help other people find the show.
I actually want them to take hours, maybe days. Let at least 5 to 10 people review it first. Make their edits. You can form committees. Then when you have the perfect review, then submit it.
No, you're asking too much, James. As always, you're asking too much.
Okay, 30 seconds.
Very good. We will see you next time, everybody.
Bye.